radio@firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
Today's podcast is proudly sponsored by Eastern Kentucky University. EKU is now offering an online Bachelor of Science in Fire and Safety Engineering Technology degree program with a concentration in fire protection engineering. Our online format allows today's working professionals the flexibility to pursue the degree without much impact to their already busy lifestyles. Visit our website at firescience.eku.edu to learn more about obtaining the technical knowledge you need from a recognized leader in fire protection engineering with EKU, ranked by Forbes.com among America's best colleges.
Hello, I'm Jim Farr with Eastern Kentucky University to talk to you today about fire dynamics. When many firefighters hear the term fire dynamics, they tune out. Why? Math, chemistry, and physics are not included in the first choices for many firefighters to study. But for today, let's talk about what happens in the field we call the study of fire dynamics, leaving the technical complications until a later class. Understand laws of physics and rules of math can be applied to better understand what did happen and predict what will occur. But rarely are we going to use computers to calculate a fire's heat release rate in the middle of a suppression battle. Think about it, estimate it, but don't calculate it precisely during the battle. This segment focuses on survival and structural size up and situational awareness. Let's start with a review. What is fire? Well, we know that it has three components in a continuous chain reaction, the components being fuel, oxygen, and heat. Sufficient oxygen must be present to react with the fuel. Heat intense enough to initiate the reaction must be in the fuel-air mixture area. Fuel in the gaseous state to chemically react with oxygen must be present. Remember that liquid and solid fuels must change to gaseous state before combustion reactions can occur. Lastly, the three must be in a chemical chain reaction of fuel and oxygen that is uninhibited. That means it keeps on going. That is what we call fire. To extinguish a fire, one must remove or reduce one of the components to a level below what the fire can sustain to continue burning. To inhibit the chain reaction is simple, right? Well, not so fast. How the fuel is arranged, the chemical formulation of that fuel, those make a huge difference in how quickly it releases the gases that enter into the combustion reaction. Less dense fuels, fuels that have a high surface to mass ratio, meaning thin materials, and fuels that are chemically break down quickly tend to burn faster. When exposed to heat and in the presence of an oxygen, then ignition occurs. So how is heat transferred to the fuel package to make it break down? It occurs through conduction, convection, and radiation. Conduction is heat moving from the warm zone to a cool zone through some conductive mass, typically metal. It's somewhat like holding a metal pan while cooking on a stove. Early in the heating, that might be okay without any rag or towel, but later on, you don't want to hold on unless you have some cloth for insulation. Convective heat transfer comes through heated fluids. That can be gases or liquids. Conduction of the heat to the fluids, then the heated fluids become less dense, expand, become buoyant. Buoyant fluids tend to rise through the more dense surrounding fluids. These heated, more buoyant fluids entrain contaminants such as soot and fire gases that become vision-obscuring smoke. These fluids then lose heat to other surfaces, thus heat is exchanged. Radiant energy is transferred through space without a transfer medium, like the sun heating the earth. There's no mass present to conduct or convect the heat, yet the energy reaches the earth and our skin. Heat transfer leads to fuels becoming involved in combustion, that is, if there's plenty of air available. So how does that apply to fire suppression and fire dynamics? When evaluating a situation, performing the size-up, you have to accurately determine what is happening. Conducting a 360-degree walk-around is only a beginning in proper assessment. Knowing building construction is important. Knowing how the fire is attacking the structure is critical. That is the dynamic part of the evaluation. There's no single factor that's enough to know what's going on. What's happening and where is it happening is essential for firefighter survival. When you're standing outside the building and the fire is inside, accuracy may suffer unless you have studied other fires for signs and symptoms of anticipated fire dynamics. Early questions include, what fuel is burning? Where is the oxygen coming from? How much heat is involved? And where is the reaction taking place? When the combustion reaction occurs inside the compartment in a building or room within the building, heat and products of the combustion are trapped, at least temporarily, within that structure. Firefighters assigned to enter the structure or compartment will come in close proximity to the fire and or intense heat. Going in is somewhat like going into the cage with a tiger. The tiger may seem friendly and benign, and it may stay that way, but things can also turn very ugly very fast. Knowing how close is close enough can be extremely important to us as firefighters. Knowing when to get the heck out is very important. Understanding when conditions are such that nothing good is likely to come from going in is critical. That is situational awareness that brings good risk-benefit evaluation. One important fact, when you see smoke, you see fuel. During the chemical reaction of fire, the part we see is that of the heat released. That's flame. The fuel that is not reacted in that area is then heated and moves away from the combustion zone. That is what we see as smoke. Unreacted fuels can collect at a point where ignition can start a new reaction away from the original flames. Understanding these fuels is paramount to your safety. Let's talk about how the unreacted fuels can react in compartment fires. What we're going to discuss is rapid fire development, and that's a generic term that is likely to injure or kill firefighters, and it includes the phenomena of backdraft, flashover, and rollover. Let's start with backdraft. Compartments where enough heat for a fire to occur and plenty of fuel gases are present, but oxygen is limited, may experience a backdraft. Fuel gases come mostly from pyrolysis of solid fuels within the compartment. Oxidation is occurring in the compartment or building, but there's not enough oxygen to react all the fuel molecules. That is, it's a very rich mixture, and the ignition temperature is present somewhere within the compartment that's sufficient to sustain the combustion. It's similar to conditions that would happen if we filled a compartment with natural gas to above its upper explosive limit, then added heat above the natural gas's ignition temperature. When an opening is made in the compartment's lower region, air containing oxygen blends with the fuel and can ignite. When mixtures are sufficient, an explosive force resulting in rapid expansion of heated gases and typically a fireball erupting down corridors and out openings will occur. That is backdraft. Many seasoned firefighters believe that if a backdraft is going to happen, it will occur within a few seconds of providing ventilation. That is not the case. 60, 90 seconds, maybe more, can elapse between us forcing a door or opening another vent and an explosion. 60 seconds seems a long time for many firefighters. We open, wait for a while, then enter. But how long did we wait? Was it long enough? Can we be partly down the corridor when a fire with explosive force pushes us back? That push is not gentle, or at least that's what some friends tell me that have experienced that. I don't care to take that ride. Thank you very much. We must understand that a backdraft is not an instant event when we change the ventilation. The explosion can be very fast, or there can be some delay. Regardless, it can project firefighters and it can collapse buildings. That's not healthy for anyone involved. Fire rollover, on the other hand, occurs when compartments are filled with burning gases moving through the convection, reaching a ceiling, then moving across the ceiling toward an opening or other intersecting wall. The good thing is flames are visible during rollover. We can see the problem, thus we can solve the problem. Unless we attack with a white fog, which brings another problem, that is fire and steam, down to our level. Now, flashover is another phenomenon that involves rapid fire progression. It's not fully understood by many. Some believe that flashover is an instant ignition of all fuels within a compartment, but really it's rapid ignition of those fuels. Unlike rollover, although the indicators of impending flashover are present, they may not be as visible. Rising temperature in the upper layer, the fire gas is above us, gases filling the upper regions of the compartment, traces of flame in the upper layer, and radiant heat flux reaching the floor all indicate flashover may be coming, but these signals are often missed by firefighters operating in the danger area. Astute officers should pick up on these signs. So what are some tips to properly read a building? First, remember that smoke is unburned fuel. A very simple understanding of fire shows that the reaction of carbon and hydrogen results in chemicals of carbon dioxide and water, but rarely does fire totally react fuels. It's difficult to achieve total combustion in hydrocarbons, which include carbohydrates and cellulose, and fuels that are predominantly carbons and hydrogens. Smoke is an indicator of what is occurring inside the compartment. Dark black smoke moving lazily from the fire intensity indicate that large concentrations of unreacted fuel with insufficient oxygen are reaching the reaction. This fuel can ignite under some conditions. Slow movement indicates lower heat release rates or that much of the heat is being transmitted to the structural elements. If the latter is occurring, hang on. The fire will get worse quickly. Once the compartment is heated and does not take on more heat from the fire, fuel conditions inside the compartment may get very nasty. Lighter smoke may indicate fuels are burning more completely, releasing less unoxidized fuel, or it may indicate that the fire is deep within a structure and that it's losing this energy on surfaces, depositing the carbon before it's being seen coming out of the building. Lighter smoke may indicate fuels are burning more completely, releasing less unoxidized fuel, or it may indicate that a fire is deep within a structure and that it's losing energy to surfaces and depositing carbon along the way out, that fire is gaining in intensity. Turbulent smoke indicates pressurization of the area. Turbulent smoke indicates pressurization of the area where smoke is moving. Rapid change causes pressure and or rapid movement, which results in turbulent or rolling effect. This indicates a high heat release rate from a well-developed fire. Laminar smoke is smoke moving in a straight line and tends to indicate heat release rate in the smoke area is lesser than with the turbulent smoke. But caution, where is the fire burning? Is the smoke disconnected from the flame? If so, where did the smoke lose its heat energy? Now, with size up, that's important. The initial size up is one of the more important things we do, but we have to continually size the building up. One of the things that we miss, I think, is oftentimes when we get into a building that's a ventilation-controlled fire, meaning it does not have as much ventilation, or the fire does not have as much ventilation as needed to continue a total reaction to get all the fuel reacted. We come up, we look at it. We think, okay, the fire's in a bedroom down the hallway of a front. We go through the front entrance. Tactically, we want to attack from the unburned side, pushing the flames away from uninvolved fuels, maybe out an adjacent vent. All that sounds good. We observe a laminar dark smoke coming from the windows of the compartment. After setting up, one crew forces the front door to initiate a search, while another advances a line to get the attack on the fire. Great coordination. But what if the fire has plenty of fuel, just not enough ventilation to go into a fully developed stage? Opening the door provides airflow in. The lower part of the opening, air goes in. Above us, air goes out. When this is happening, it's probably not going to be obvious immediately, but heat is going out over us. As we begin crawling down the hallway to attack the fire, we may not look up, but heat is going across the very top of us. That's what we've got to watch constantly. Most of the time when we go down a corridor, everything goes fine. But if the heat increases rapidly, rollover can occur just above advancing crews. We can see that happening. But what if it's flashover conditions? Are we watching for that to happen? Are we so deep into the compartment that we have not paid attention that what's happening above us is going to prevent us from getting out? We've got to pay attention, maintain situational awareness. Well, the obvious answer might seem to be to ventilate. But where? Do we ventilate through the compartment opening to open up that window or whatever else is available to blow the fire out? That's great. Where is the air going in? Where is it going out? If the air is moving inward but not outward, the turbulence may mix the fuel and facilitate better combustion. Can we overcome wind forces with a blower? If not, air is blown back over the firefighters, maybe the fire. Will the fire get bigger when the blower comes on or when we ventilate? Probably. We're adding oxygen to the fire. Keep in mind that one of the rules of fire dynamics is for every gram of oxygen we add to a fire, we get a heat release rate of about 13 kilojoules or about 13 BTUs. Increase the ventilation, we increase the amount of heat release rate. Now, that's kind of like throwing gasoline on a fire. If we were to stand back and throw a bucket of gasoline on a fire, we would anticipate a very large fire developing quickly. But what about when we throw air on it? We should anticipate that the fire is going to increase in size. The main thing that we want to take from this discussion is that fire is a very dynamic thing. When you change one parameter, expect change in other facets of the operation. When you increase the fuel available, expect the heat release rate increase. The same happens with oxygen. When the fire is contained in a compartment or in compartments, expect movement toward the ventilation openings. Even the vent will open up and allow the fire to move toward the vent opening. If you're between the flame and the vent, expect heat and flames to come your way. Stop them with water or other extinguishing agents to keep yourself safe. So here's some hints that may help. First, observe. Look at conditions constantly. Do a 360 walk around to start with and then continue observing. Use thermal imagery. Look for the infrared signatures to see heat that is obscured by smoke. Number three, remember that smoke is fuel. Fuel in a readily combustible form, in vapors or particles. Once inside, if the visual conditions are such that you cannot see identifiers of what's happening, throw a small amount of water fog into the upper layer. If the water returns in liquid form, then conditions are not that bad. It's not that hot above you. But if little or no return is received, the upper layer is above the boiling point, above 212 degrees Fahrenheit, and could be getting dangerous. Short bursts of a straight stream may dilute the atmosphere and prevent the fuel ignition. That is fuel above you when you have smoke up there. And lastly, when you change ventilation, anticipate that the fire will move, because it will move and things will change. We thank you for your time and urge you to stay safe.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening. And stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these. Or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.
Today's podcast is proudly sponsored by Eastern Kentucky University. EKU is now offering an online Bachelor of Science in Fire and Safety Engineering Technology degree program with a concentration in fire protection engineering. Our online format allows today's working professionals the flexibility to pursue the degree without much impact to their already busy lifestyles. Visit our website at firescience.eku.edu to learn more about obtaining the technical knowledge you need from a recognized leader in fire protection engineering with EKU, ranked by Forbes.com among America's best colleges.